fellow Freedom fans. We're back. Heady discussion here, folks. It's very, it's a heady discussion. It's, again, we burn brain cells here. And again, I was reviewing some of the things that are going on with regard to the Federal Reserve. And I will just backtrack. I'll just let you know this article is in Forbes.com. It's actually very good. If you type in a search on the internet and type in audit the Federal Reserve, there's this article from the Forbes magazine at Forbes.com. It'll show up right there at the top of your list. And it's an article that came out 2 days ago. It'll show up right above a article that says audit the Federal Reserve, H.R. 1207 and Senate 604. So far it has, obviously, Mr. Ron Paul and 275 co-sponsors. So that means that it has got enough, they say, to pass the House. They've got some senators, both Democrat and Republican, that have signed on and say that they support this. Now, of course, there's some contentions. The Federal Reserve is saying that they already have been giving audit powers, some of the powers with the TARP bill and things like that. There are some audit information that's happening. There's minutes of the Federal Reserve Board's meetings can be published within 5 years of each meeting. Now, who knows what kind of meetings they have before the meeting, so we're not really sure of all the things that are going into that. But they say there's already some kind of accountability going on, so it's not necessary. They're concerned that it'll mess up the Federal Reserve's ability to stay independent. Now, one of the things that I saw is that when reviewing some of the things that they have the power to audit, some of these foreign swaps and some of the things that they're doing with regard to opening up funds to foreigners are not something that are subject to review. There is some secrecy. So, and for whatever reason, I think folks are going to want to look into that. Here's something, again, that may irritate people that I'm doing this, but I'm going to talk about something that came in the news in 2001. Let's see. It was on July 14th. There was a report that said President Barack Obama says he is collecting facts about the killing of up to 2,000 Taliban prisoners in November 2001, reportedly by fighters of a U.S.-backed warlord in northern Afghanistan, General Abdul Rashid Dostum. But rights observers say they believe U.S. forces could have been directly involved in the mass slaying. There is a video. It's a 50-minute video that's been published. It's sort of semi-published on the internet. I think some organization called democracy.com or something like that. You can do a search on it. But it talks about this Afghanistan instance where they took people who they said, okay, if you'll surrender, we're going to make sure that that you're going to have UN protection and you're going to be all right. We'll just take your arms, send you back home. There's a few of you that the Americans are going to want to take off to Cuba or wherever they're going to take. And in fact, the American, Mr. Lin, I think he's from Southern California originally. He was found in this group and he was taken away from that group prior to them being shipped out to this prison. It turns out there's this prison that supposedly should hold about 600 people, already had over 3,000 people in it. And so it was basically filled to the gills with prisoners when several thousand more were shipped in that direction. The report is that they were shipped out to this remote location in what they call these their boxcars kind of thing. They're the big metal containers that you see on ships in the back of trucks. And they were stuffed in there from 150 to 200 or more even, 150 or more men stuffed into these boxes. And about 20 minutes into the progress of this trucking, about 25 trucks taking people off into this equivalent to about 120 miles away. They were stuffed into these boxes, and about 20 minutes into it, people were screaming because it was super hot. I don't imagine how many people, you know, jammed next to each other, standing next to each other, crammed next to each other, could survive in a closed container like that, but they were screaming for air. There's a little carbon, a CO2 thing. See, they had a too big of a CO2 footprint. So somebody ordered somebody with a gun to make holes in the container. Now, I'll tell you, if you know anything about, I can't see how little bullet holes could really provide the air needed for 150 more people crammed in some of those boxes. But they opened fire with machine guns. Now, it may be that the guy in charge never thought that these guys would be stupid enough to shoot at the level where men are standing. You know, maybe he presumed that they would shoot at the top of the boxes so the air holes would be opened up at the top of the box, you know, along the top ridge. But what happened is eyewitnesses said that they just stood there and opened up with machine gun fire at the level where men were standing. And of course, if without being too gory, you'll understand that there was a flow of a liquid that began to come out, and it happened to be red. And it turns out that some of these guys were left in these boxes, ultimately, supposedly some people said for days. But when they finally got to this place where they're supposed to be let off, that many of them were dead from suffocation. Many of them, and for heat exhaustion or whatever it was, or heat stroke, I guess you would call it. And some of them were obviously depleted of their liquid flow of the red stuff, so because of the bullet holes in them. And of course, there was just all kinds of horrible things that were going on. So it was pretty bad. And I guess when they opened the doors, there were Americans there who were there as security looking over this, kind of overseeing this prison. And they were really, the Americans there, I think, were looking for Al-Qaeda suspects that were of interest to them. And they were also providing security so that if Taliban came and attacked the prison, that there was, well over 100 U.S. soldiers there. And so they were looking on as some of these guys were let out, and many of them were dead, many of them were dying. And they were kind of overseeing that when some of the guys that were pulled out and the ones that survived, very few survived, were put into this little prison. The rest were stuffed back in the truck. And then the truck was driven off into a kind of a wilderness area not too far away. And the trucks were opened, and they were going to dispose of literally thousands of people that have been stuffed away in these boxes like tuna. Okay, with no humanity thought to what would happen to 150 plus guys if you stuffed them in a container like this. You know, this is kind of like Nazi stuff, you know? This is kind of like some of the reports you hear about with the Japanese, and they're marching those guys off the Bataan Death March and things like this. Well, this kind of like it appears that it's a little bit more even extreme than that. It doesn't take as long, but it was a little bit torturesome. So that's what's going on. Then it turns out that maybe 30 to 40 American soldiers were standing by and went out when the trucks were delivered to bury these bodies, that a good number of the people they found out weren't dead. They were unconscious or seriously wounded. And so then the Afghani warlords guys eliminated those people and made them dead before they were put in a mass grave. So in this, I guess there were, you know, potentially hundreds of people that were eliminated right there. And these reports are being given by the truck drivers, because there were people that had their trucks commandeered. They were just going about their business, and somebody, here, follow me. You take your truck. We're going to do this. And so they actually watched what happened, and some of the reports are that there were U.S. soldiers providing security for these events. Now the question comes in. I think we don't know what happened. At this point, nobody really knows. There has not been a credible investigation from a government agency to look into these allegations. This happened in 2001. And it seems that the previous administration had pretty much done potentially some obstruction to the investigation. That's a very good possibility. So there are folks that want that looked into. And then the other thing is, it's possible that I think there's organizations out there who say somebody needs to hold these guys accountable. Now, I think the main culprit that they're trying to pin some of this stuff on would ultimately be Mr. Dostum. Mr. Dostum was the general who was in charge. He was sort of, they called him a warlord. I think there was three different factions of what they called the Northern Alliance. These are just groups of people, culture groups and things like that, that got together and were fighting the Taliban with the partnership and equipping of the CIA, I believe. And there were some U.S. military Air Force personnel and possibly some others that were providing, calling in airstrikes and other kind of support to the operation. So it was pretty much where the Americans were there while the Northern Alliance, I guess the group, this, I guess the alliance of a couple of groups with different leaders, were pretty much taking the lead with this battle against the Taliban in 2001 there in Afghanistan. So it turns out that Mr. Dostum is the guy who has most of these accusations made against. It was his men. It was he was the one who came up with the put all the guys in the trucks idea and cart them off to the certain place. And he was the guy who made negotiations. He was the guy who talked to the Taliban guys, when the thousands. He got them to surrender, giving them certain promises about what would happen to them. And that was the bait to say, hey, you don't need to fight. You don't need to be, if you've been recruited into this strange activity here, you can go ahead and turn in your weapons. You'll be treated well. And we're gonna bring peace to your situation. So Mr. Dostum is basically the guy who's kind of where everybody's looking, where they believe that the blame ought to be placed. So that's something I was going to try to get one of these organizations that's been looking into this to give us an interview. And we had one lined up a couple of days ago, and it didn't come to pass. We're still on the hook for that. And we just got to make sure we make it convenient for them, because they're pretty busy right now through all this things that are going on and the attention that's finally being brought to this matter. So why am I going here? Why would I go here? Well, it's one of those things where we watch, and just to let you know, you're listening to the Eagle 104.3 FM. Stay with us, baby. Our number here is 888-850-1872. There's another report in the news about something that happened in 1950 in Korea. And one of the things, it was a similar situation where the South Koreans were eliminating some of the people that they considered political dissidents, so that they would not be able to join the Northern Korea forces and end up fighting against them. So when you see the pattern back then, it looks as if that the United States military just kind of stood by and allowed South Korea to commit atrocities and say, well, it's an internal matter. And it'll be interesting to look into this to find out what's going on there in Afghanistan, that it very well may be that happened again. Well, this is an internal matter. You know, we can't really interfere with this. Oh, can you? I mean, if you're interfering, if you're providing weapons, you're enabling, part of the reason all these guys gave up is because you're the guy calling in airstrikes. And I mean, there's a lot to this. And if you're the Americans, you're supposed to be the good guy. Well, what are your responsibilities? Is there somebody making policy with regard to this? Is there somebody giving some advanced thought about what the U.S. role should be? And as an example, we look back in North Korea or South Korea back in 1950, and it turned out it was a British officer that nipped some of the stuff in the bud, because he found out what was going on. And he approached one of the South Korean officers when they were in the middle of about preparing to slaughter some of their prisoners. And the British officer said, listen, you do what you say you're going to do, and I'm going to use my guys and my military guys standing behind me. We're going to eliminate you. And so guess what happened? Those guys weren't murdered. They were actually put in jail and kept as prisoners rather than murdered. So that's kind of a hot potato, isn't it? Isn't it uncomfortable? My wife says there's certain things in life, there's certain music you might hear, where sometimes it's uncomfortable to listen to, because you realize, oh my goodness, it ramps up my accountability. But hey, you want me to just keep making sure that all you got is Kool-Aid? Folks, we got to get rid of the Kool-Aid mentality. Let's drink the pure water, folks. Let's get back to getting reality. Yes, we're here about accountability. Liberty Works Radio Network. We don't want to just say we're always the good guys. What we're trying to do is make sure we all become and remain and retain being the good guy perpetually for our sake and our posterity. We'll be back. Our number here is 888-850-1872.